I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 29th of April. We are delighted to have David K. Johnston with us in just a moment. He has written many, many books for a number of years now looking at income inequality. He says the U.S. is the most unequal of developed nations, and he's written about it for a long time. Now, suddenly it has come to the attention of many writers, and three of the top-selling books in the country right now have to do with income inequality. David is joining us in a moment. I do want to tell you that we're in a pledge drive, and these are very important to us, so we'd like to have you pledge during this hour because we've been on this subject for a long time. Our pledge number is 888-202-2552, and you can also go to WPR.org. David K. Johnston is an investigative reporter. He won a Pulitzer Prize while at the New York Times. He teaches business, tax, and property law of the ancient world at Syracuse University's College of Law. He is the best-selling author of Perfectly Legal, Free Lunch, and The Fine Print. He writes for Al Jazeera. He is the editor of the important new anthology, Divided, The Perils of Our Growing Inequality. David has uncovered so many tax dodges that he has been called the de facto chief tax enforcement officer of the U.S. We'll be welcoming phone calls for David during the course of this hour. Our on-air number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Hello, David. Nice to talk to you again.
Well, nice to be back, Kathleen.
Yeah. We've talked to you for years now, and you remind us that years ago in your book, Perfectly Legal, you were showing us that the top tenth of 1% had nearly as much reported income as the bottom half.
Right, and that has actually continued. Even though Perfectly Legal came out at the end of 2003, the numbers, the ratios in it are essentially unchanged. The median income, the median wage, that is, half of workers make more, half make less, has been stuck since 1998 at a little over $500 a week.
Since the president took office 5 years ago, you remind us the stock market has more than doubled while average incomes have fallen. How can that be?
Well, what's happening is all of the income gains are going to the very top. And let me just walk through these numbers, Kathleen, because they are absolutely stunning. From 2009, that's when the Great Recession officially ended in the middle of the year, through 2012, one-third of all the increased income in America went to 16,000 households. That's the 1% of the 1%.
Mm-hmm.
95% of all the increased income went to the top 1%, and the bottom 90% saw their income fall by about 16%.
Those are really amazing numbers, and numbers that all of a sudden we are beginning to pay attention to. I was noting you have a new book out now, which we will talk about, but three of the major best-selling books right now deal with the very subject of income inequality. Somebody's paying attention. Who's paying attention?
Well, the number one selling book right now on Amazon is Thomas Piketty's book called Capital.
Mm-hmm.
He is a French economist whose work I've cited for years, who has been studying income inequality around the world, and it is a fundamental text on economics, although you don't have to be an economist to understand what he's written. But he's trying to write a book like Adam Smith did with The Wealth of Nations, like Karl Marx did with Capital, which his name is intended to render. It's called Capital for the 21st Century, like Lord Keynes did with A General Theory. And the fact that it's selling so well is terrific. And part of the reason, I think, for that, Kathleen, is that he makes use of novels from 18th and 19th century France to illustrate his point about inequality.
What novels? How do they make the point?
Well, he cites one of Balzac's novels about a young man who loses his fortune. And he decides he'll go to law school and then he can become comfortable. And it's pointed out to him by someone that the only way to really get rich because of the French system was to marry this wealthy woman. But standing in the way of marrying this woman is another suitor, and therefore his real option is to kill the other man in order to regain his fortune via her, or to simply live an adequately in a life with enough income to get by. And all throughout the book, he presents examples from the Belle Epoque and other eras to show and illustrate the points that he's making about where we're going. And his point is essentially the one I've made for years, that the enormous inequality that we are seeing in our country, and that I think is a great threat to whether America endures, is the result of government policies, many of which I'm the only person who's written about, that subtly take money from the many and redistribute to the few. And when you've only got 16,000 people in the top 100th of 1%, you've only got a household. I mean, you've only got 160,000 households in the top 10th of 1%. You don't have to take a lot from the other 315 million Americans. You know, a penny a day for this industry and a nickel a day for that one. And pretty soon, without your noticing it, your pockets have been drained and the money has been turned over to benefit these folks. And it's often done in indirect ways.
And tell me about these folks' participation in the political process because of a recent Supreme Court decision and others, and there may be even more. Are politicians terribly beholden to those people who have all the wealth?
Oh, they're completely beholden to them. And every senator and congressman and state legislator I've interviewed in the last 15 or 20 years, if you talk long enough to them, they'll tell you they hate the system, but they're too scared to really change it. The reality is that if you hold public office, ordinary voters don't matter to you unless you really put together an extraordinary campaign. It's a handful of people who direct contributions from you and say, hey, Kathleen Dunn, she's okay, she'll take care of us. And if you don't, or at least appear to be doing so, they'll find ways to raise money for somebody to replace you. There's actually an organization specifically dedicated to this called the Club for Growth. Mm-hmm. And they don't believe in big tent Republicanism. They believe in a very narrow view of capitalist uber all, and they have gotten voted out of office many people. They aren't always successful, but they've been successful many times.
The thing that I don't understand on just a human level, David, is you get this enormous amount of money, so much that you and I can't even imagine it. What, it's just astronomically high sums of money. What the heck do you do with it? Why do you want it all? Wouldn't it be something that you would want to share?
Well, no. In fact, back in the 90s, when the maximum a couple could leave before the estate tax hit was between $1 million and $2 million, only about 7% of taxable estates left a gift to charity, and even many estates over $20 million did
really?
Not leave a gift to charity. Yeah, charity, which I've also covered for years, and disclosure, my wife runs a large community foundation. Charity, like beer, whiskey, and plain yogurt, is an acquired taste, and a lot of people never acquire it.
That's amazing. You have a new book, Divided, The Perils of Our Growing Inequality. You have brought together all kinds of people, economists, politicians, journalists, scholars, to look at the culture of inequality.
Yes, there are 44 contributors, President Obama, Senator Warren, Paul Krugman and Joe Stiglitz, the Nobel Prize-winning economists, who contributed to this book. I've got epidemiologists, experts on wage theft, family structure, incarceration, health care, and public health. And all of them did this because they believe that Americans need to understand not just the numbers, which are dramatic, but what are the forces that are causing this and reinforcing it and that are damaging our democracy. And one of the things I don't have in the book and sort of wish I did was a piece I did for Newsweek a few weeks ago about how the and what the Founding Fathers warned us about. And John Adams, for example, wrote about his worries that a business aristocracy would arise in America. And if you didn't have yeoman farmers who owned their land and craftsmen who owned their tools, but people who simply depended on wages to get by, that this business aristocracy would persuade the wage earners that what they need, the business aristocrats need, is really in the interests of the workers, and it would lead to massive inequality and the end of our liberties, which is, you know, a fairly good description of what's going on today.
Mm. You talk about certain things that happened in times past, and you spend some time on journalism and remind us of CBS's Harvest of Shame, which was a knockout documentary that brought national attention, and we were all watching one of three networks in those days. And you also mentioned the president. We could look at FDR. We could also look at LBJ, who really had a heart for the issues that confront us right now. Is part of the problem that we have a press that's not doing its job, David?
Well, that is a very major problem, but and I've been writing press criticism for more than 40 years, but let me just say on behalf of journalists, the fastest disappearing white-collar job in America in the last 15 years was journalist.
Right.
And the New York Times, when you adjust for inflation today, has about one-third the revenues it did in the late 90s. The amount of money available for reporting has shrunken tremendously. I mean, I spent 30 years of my life where if I woke up in the morning and said, I need to go across country somewhere, I just went to the airport and got on the airplane and went. Nobody mm-hmm. questioned what I did because I performed. Toward the end of my days at the New York Times, they were like, you know, do you really need to go there? And because they didn't have the budget. And so you have fewer journalists. They've been cleaning out of older journalists with experience. And the real problem there is what is called beat reporting, not so much investigative reporting. I'm the president of investigative reporters and editors of the 4,900 investigative reporters that belong to our trade association. We do education and training. But beat reporting, you know, just covering City Hall, right. Going down and watching the school board meeting, that's just vanishing in America. There hasn't been a reporter at the school board for my suburb of Rochester, New York, in months and maybe a few years.
David K. Johnston is our guest this hour, and we're talking about inequality. David has been writing about this for a long time. He's done great journalism work all over the world, really. He's an investigative reporter. He's won a Pulitzer when he was at the New York Times. And we've talked about each of the books that he's written, Perfectly Legal, Free Lunch, and The Fine Print. He's writing for Al Jazeera now, and he is the editor of the important new anthology, Divided, The Perils of Our Growing Inequality. We'll be welcoming phone calls for him, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and we're also on Facebook, and we would love to hear from you during the course of this hour. We would like to prove also that generosity is still very much alive among Wisconsin Public Radio listeners, and your support for this kind of journalism and these kinds of conversations is really, really critical. I'm Kathleen Dunn, as you probably know by now. Lisa Nalbandian is with me in our Milwaukee studios, and we are in our Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. Your support is so much an essential piece of the funding for the Kathleen Dunn Show and all of the programs that you enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio. And it's time for you to be generous, to take action, to become a WPR contributor with your gift, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, let's recap. So during Chapter a Day, we heard from 42 listeners.
Great.
Thank you. Isn't that wonderful? 42.
Yes.
That's pretty solid. But it's a brand new hour, and we have a brand new goal of 35 pledges. So, you know, let's make it.
Let's make that goal. Let's do it.
Make a contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. The programs you enjoy will be here every day on Wisconsin Public Radio, thanks to your support.
Wisconsin Public Radio, it's amazing what happens every day here. You're informed, you're entertained every single day. So many programs, Joy Cardine Show, Larry Mueller Show, Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Many, many, many programs that you have come to rely on.
And when you listen to WPR, you get this picture, this understanding of the world that you just can't get anywhere else. I mean, our guest, David Johnston, just kind of casually referenced Balzac just earlier in our previous section. I mean, where else are you going to find that? Support this exciting mix of shows that you enjoy with your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And it's really pretty easy to give. It's just a few minutes of your time. You just say what your name is, contact information, how much you would like to give, and how you would like to pay. And you can do it in a lump sum or become a monthly sustainer. But however you choose to give or however much you choose to give, please use the next few minutes to support the station that you count on for these kinds of conversations. They are rare. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is, I mean, it is Wisconsin. I moved here from another state, and that was my introduction to Wisconsin. And every day, that's how I know what's going on in Wisconsin. On a monthly basis, I'm contributing to Wisconsin Public Radio. When I hear them talk about sustaining members, I realize that's me. And I kind of like that. Contributing to Wisconsin Public Radio makes you feel like you're part of a family or like a community. That's how I feel every month. And even if they're just giving a small amount, they can feel that way too. I'm Bridget from Oak Creek, Wisconsin. Join me as a sustainer of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Pledge at WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Lisa Nalbandian joining me here and asking for your support of WPR during our spring membership drive. Your gift might be $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your gift right now is powerful. It says that you value this service and want to be the next member in our WPR community. New members are so important. Without you, we wouldn't be able to grow and improve our services like we do every year.
You care enough to listen. Now support your source for meaningful radio and make your gift of $5 a month, whatever amount is best for you, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Okay, here's something not too surprising. Wisconsin Public Radio listeners love to read.
Absolutely.
And you've probably gotten a lot of book recommendations from your WPR listening. Maybe it's a book on chapter a day, or an interview with an author, or something that you heard on this show, maybe the topic this hour, that made you want to go out and learn more.
Your WPR listening leads really to a never-ending book list because we're always adding to it. So your donation at this very moment makes that kind of endless enjoyment possible. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And maybe you donated a few years back and kind of feel like, yeah, I've done my part. I've put in my time. But, you know, you listen then, and now you probably listen a lot more. Your continued support is what keeps us going year after year.
This is the time to give again. WPR.org, 888-202-2552, and we will be glad to have you back.
You've made this great habit, right, of listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, to tuning into Kathleen Dunn every day. So now it's time to make an equally great habit to donate. Get started today with your pledge of any amount. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have 32 more pledges. And how many minutes do we have, Lisa? I'm bad at this.
About 35.
35 minutes. Please pledge during this hour. These conversations are important, and you don't hear them very often at other places. And it would be good to know that you know that they're important. I know you know that. But your support will make the difference here, and it will make all of these great programs possible. Be part of it. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Make sure to ask for the 2014 Artist Mug with your pledge today. So it's this beautiful Wisconsin Public Radio mug, and it was designed by a local artist from Cedarburg. Her name is Renee Grafe. And she's a nationally known illustrator from Cedarburg.
It's got animals running the radio station.
It does have animals.
That's my kind of radio station. Animals running the joint, enjoying WPR programs as they go about their day. And it's yours for a pledge of $150 or more, $12.50 a month, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you're not already a sustainer to Wisconsin Public Radio, Become one right now. You can set up these ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card. You can do that at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
Your pledge is very important. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. And thank you for your support of WPR. And thank you, Lisa. David K. Johnston is our guest. We're talking about wealth inequality this hour of the program. He's the editor of a new anthology, Divided, The Perils of Our Growing Inequality. And he says a big part of the issue is having wider ownership of capital. We need higher wages. We'll continue our conversation and welcome your phone calls from the audience now, 800-486-8655. David K. Johnston is with us now, and we go to phone calls starting with Lynn in Eau Claire. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Kathleen, and hello, David. You are one of my heroes. There's
Thank
so
you.
Much involved in this, and I think a lot of it is a matter of semantics, where people think that, you know, the word associated with the right-wing, you know, conservative is a good thing, but it has nothing to do with conserving anything but their own place in an unequal society. And when people are not educated, or when education is priced over the grasp of, you know, we rabble, then that kind of notion is perpetuated, that, you know, we are the conservators, the 99%, and then the conservatives are the 1% who are conserving, you know, their own wealth. And that's about all I have to say.
Thanks, Lynn. David?
Well, thank you, Lynn. One thing I point out about this, the wealth holding is not really the 1%. That's become the popular phrase because of Occupy. 1% starts at about $360,000. That can be a doctor married to an anesthesiology nurse, or a school superintendent in a big city, a school principal in a big city married to a homicide detective. It's the 10th of 1% who start at $2 million, and the 100th of 1% who start at about $10 million. Those are the people who really own the wealth, especially that top group. And that group is so wealthy that Mitt Romney is near the bottom of the top 1%
really?
Of the 1%. Yeah.
We have
people in America with billion-dollar annual incomes, which they do not have to pay taxes on because of the way Congress has written the laws. And the top 400 actual taxpayers, on average over the last 10 years, have been making about $1 million a day. Romney's fortune, at least as he reported it, was a quarter of a billion. I think it's significantly larger, but that's what he put down in his official documents. And many of the arguments you're hearing about this wealth in America and people at the top have nothing to do with conservative values of keeping time-tested ideas that work. Progressive taxation is 2,500 years old. Every classic worldly philosopher, even John Locke in extremely mild form, but even John Locke supported this. George W. Bush said he supported it. And yet we have many people running around literally arguing that the job creators should live tax-free because they'll create more jobs if we do that. It's utter nonsense, but it certainly is self-interested utter nonsense.
Yeah. Well, is part of this discussion, or is it just way off base? We did a show, I don't know if you've seen this book, on living on a dollar a day, which is really large, with extraordinary pictures of people all over the world who are, you know, having to be involved in prostitution. They're recycling things to make a living. They're living in horrendous, horrendous places, all kinds of environmental hazards, et cetera. It seems to me as though there's a moral part of this equation that I don't know if we can get at in some way or not, but I think most people would agree that if this kind of disparity affects that, and there are more people who are living on a dollar a day in squalid conditions because there are fewer people who are making $1 million a day, that's hard to even imagine, then we know that something's wrong. I mean, do we need to get at the moral part of this, David?
Well, I think all of this is about moral issues. You know, Adam Smith's first book was called Moral Sentiments, and in it he said that we, as human beings, we have a tendency to almost admire and worship the rich and to try and avoid and think badly of the poor. And so we need to understand that fundamentally there is a moral issue here And the extreme poverty that we're seeing, well, it's awful overseas, no question about that. My focus has always been on America. But here in America, the extreme poverty we have is just fundamental. I mean, where I live in Rochester, New York, which was the boom town and cutting-edge technology center of America in the 19th century, now you have one of the worst school districts in America. 9% of black males graduate from high school
on
time. 9%.
Oh, my.
And you step across the street, and you are now in one of the top, in fact, two. There are two side by side, two of the top 100 school districts in America that are generating, you know, artists and writers and CEOs and doctors who do great research just across the street. And that's an indication of how the systems we're creating are reinforcing poverty, denying opportunity, and seeing to it that the existing fortunes are protected rather than creating new fortunes. I want us to create wealth. I want us to have competitive markets, and I want us to have systems with integrity. And what we are seeing is rule after rule after rule put in place by government that thwarts the invisible hand of the competitive market, that takes from the many in subtle ways to redistribute upward to the few, and that lacks integrity. And every week I read a column in Al Jazeera, almost every week I read a piece in Newsweek where I say, here's another one of these rules that takes from the many and gives to the few. There's so many of them. I mean, it's just relatively easy to find.
Yeah. An email from Matthew. I think the most potent argument the right has regarding taxing the rich essentially boils down to they earned it. It's their money, not the government's. I need a good answer to that argument, especially in terms of wealth transfers like food stamps, Medicaid, et cetera, not roads, bridges, stuff that the rich admit they need.
Well, that's a good question, and I'm glad Matthew asked it, and let me go at it in two ways. First of all, pay attention to all the wealth transfers that go upward. Read my piece in Newsweek last week, or I guess it's the current issue is still out, about sports teams and trying to tax people forever to give money to billionaire sports team owners, and my book Free Lunch, which documents all the public money that we transfer to Warren Buffett and other people at the top. So we have enormous welfare in this country that goes upward and exceeds the amount that goes down. The subsidy to the too big to fail banks is $83 billion a year. That is more than food stamps. Now, the other argument is I earned it. Well, you did earn it. There's no question that you earned it. And in many cases, you earned it by very diligent hard work. And I admire you for doing that. Just like I got myself up from the bottom third to the top 1% through decades of diligence and hard work. But how are you going to pay the cost of having a common wealth? How are you going to invest in the goods and services that are needed for future generations of wealth, education being primary among them in research? The only way you do that is you have to harvest your winners. And the ancient Athenians worked this out 2,500 years ago. They figured out that the only reason that you can have great wealth is you live in this civilized place called Athens, which had courts to adjudicate disputes and laws that defined what is yours and what is someone else's, and a military to protect your fortune where all the farmers were sent off to fight when they were needed to, that would protect your wealth. Whereas in the man's natural state, thugs would just come along, run you through, rape your daughters, kill your sons and your wife, and then kill you. Civilization has a cost. The price of civilization is taxes. And this is what the Athenians figured out. The greater the economic gain you manage to achieve because you live in Athens, the greater your duty to give back to the community that made your wealth possible. And that's what we need to focus on. We are absolutely saying to the people who are the most successful, you're going to bear the heaviest burden of taxes because of a conservative 2,500-year-old moral principle that you didn't do this on your own. All sorts of other things made it possible for you to do it. If you take today's wealthy Americans and transplant them to rural Bangladesh or Uganda, they're not going to have the fortunes they have. They have them because of the society we live in.
David K. Johnston is our guest, and we'll take phone calls, more of them for him in just a moment. Our on-air phone number is 800-486-8655. David is, he's written all kinds of books, many books over the past 10 years that have looked at growing inequality. His latest is a series. It's an anthology, Divided, The Perils of Our Growing Inequality. He writes for Newsweek magazine, Al Jazeera. He was at the New York Times, where he won a Pulitzer. And he teaches business, tax, and property law of the ancient world at Syracuse University College of Law. We'll take more phone calls momentarily. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We're also in our spring membership drive, and Lisa Nalbandian is joining me here in Milwaukee. You know, you rely on WPR for all these kinds of conversations. They're in-depth discussions about issues that are so crucial. And we rely on you to keep programs like this on the air. So your gift right now of any amount makes a difference. It's an important thing for you to do. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're looking to get 27 pledges in the next 20 minutes or so. Remember, your pledge right now makes this show possible, makes all the shows possible. Make your contribution, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
When you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, we're talking about the importance of community, and we're all in this together. You really make your community a better place because you're engaged, you're informed, you're smarter, you're a good member of the democracy. When you give to Wisconsin Public Radio, you're doubling all the good you do.
And that's because Wisconsin Public Radio is listener-supported. What does that mean? Well, it means when you become a member, that membership is really the financial support of the Wisconsin Public Radio budget. Your support makes this incredible service available not only to you, to your immediate community, but the entire state. Mm-hmm. Pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm sure you listen to WPR year-round, and now you can donate the same way you listen by becoming a sustaining member. Make the decision once. You'll make affordable contributions. Oh, I don't know, $10 or $20 a month for as long as you wish.
It's easy to budget, and it cuts down on paperwork. So I don't know what more you need than that. Become a sustainer right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You know, it won't be too long from now, and WPR will be celebrating its 100th birthday. Isn't that amazing? And we've been around and with such high quality thanks to you. Listener donations make up the single largest piece of our budget.
Your contribution makes the Kathleen Dunn Show possible and so many others on the Ideas Network possible. When you donate, you become part of the quality you hear every day on Wisconsin Public Radio. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Your call is important to us, so please leave a message after the beep.
I'm not originally from here. I'm from Florida, and huge fan of Wisconsin Public Radio, a regular contributor. We didn't have anything even remotely close to it in Florida. And from what I understand from a lot of people who call out of state, there isn't anything like it in the country.
Go to WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Your gift, $10 or $15 a month, whatever amount you choose, is the right amount. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Whoops, there we go.
Starting a membership to Wisconsin Public Radio is easy. It takes a few minutes of your time and a gift of any amount, say $10 or $15 a month.
And that donation will come back to you every day in the form of great programs. Show your support. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Please give as generously as you can.
We've got a lot of ways to say, make your pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, we can say, stand up and be counted. How about make your voice be heard? Or here's another one, support what you love.
Yeah.
Here's the bottom line. You do all of those things and you really make a difference when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have about 27 more pledges to go, and we have about 20 minutes to get there. We can do it. Just call.
That's right. And make sure to ask for the 2014 artist mug when you pledge. It was designed by a Wisconsin artist, and the mug is made in the USA.
Your pledge makes a difference. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. And thank you so much. We're going to go to more phone calls. David K. Johnston is our guest this hour. We're talking about wealth inequality in this country, which has reached a point that we haven't seen for a long, long time. And what are the ramifications of that? A substantial subject. David's been writing about this for a long time. Our next call is John in Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi.
Irene, you certainly have your program as being one of the best programs for talking about wealth inequality, and that we got to congratulate you for that.
Thank you.
Your guest, I would like to ask him if he's familiar with the program of history of assassinated Senator Huey Long from Louisiana, and although, and I know he works for Newsweek and Al Jazeera, so he's working for the ultra-rich, but he might have a partial sympathy for the less wealthy. So I'd like to ask him if he knows anything about the story of Huey Long, his programs, et cetera.
Oh, I'm sure he does.
Oh, yeah, sure. In fact, my dad is from Nolens, so yes, I'm very familiar with Huey Long. My father actually was a messenger boy for him.
Was he really?
Yes.
Huh. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Do you have anything more you want to say about that, or are you just going to pique our interest?
No, his best stories are not fit for public radio.
Do you see, and is it important for us? We were doing a show with Susan Page from USA Today yesterday, and she was quoting the Washington Post article about Elizabeth Warren, who also has a book out now,
right,
saying that she, if she were to challenge Hillary Clinton, she would be the only person in the Democratic Party who would have a clear path to the nomination should she do that in 2016. Does she represent just this small fraction of people, and do you represent just a small fraction of people who are taking these issues to heart, David?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because there's lots of polling data now that shows that there is very broad public support for fundamentally changing what's going on here. And Senator Warren, who I've known for many years, and she contributed one of the chapters in the book about how the best friend of the poor is a strong middle class, and of course we're systematically reducing the ranks of the middle class. I think that at least on economic issues, Elizabeth Warren is a serious, substantial, very hardworking and strategic person. We ought to pay a lot of respect to, but you know, the only way you get to run for president of the United States is if you're vetted and approved by Wall Street. And if you look at President Obama, you know, despite the nonsense from people like Glenn Beck, you know, who said he doesn't like white people, I called up the White House and I asked for a list of all the professional staff, and it was virtually all white. The way the money system works, if the serious folks in a handful of zip codes in Manhattan and Los Angeles County don't support you, you don't have a real shot at running for president of the United States. And it's totally, therefore, distorting our politics. A majority of Republicans, Kathleen, a majority of Republicans favor raising, I would say restoring, but favor raising the minimum
wage. Yes.
Somewhere, depending on which poll you look at, from the high 70s to the low 80s of Americans favor progressive taxes, including a minimum tax on people with $1 million-plus incomes. A significant minority of people support expanding Social Security, which is the most efficient way to provide income to people in old age. So Washington is really very, very much out of touch, and this will change when more people go to vote. And that's why you're seeing this effort to take away the franchise. If you don't limit the franchise, something that is completely antithetical to our history for the last 50 years, but generally the history of the United States, other than the Jim Crow South, we will have politics that are much more in line with economic reality and with our competitors. You know, Japan, we imposed a constitution on Japan after World War II. You know that it requires unions. How can you say unions are un-American if we said to the Japanese, you must by law have a right to have unions and have unions? Unions are market economics, and if you believe in market economics, you should believe in unions, and that's probably the single biggest thing we could do to improve incomes in this country, because without unions and with a large number of unemployed people and a large number of minimally skilled people, it pushes down wages for everyone except the managerial class.
Scott is our next caller in La Crosse. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Kathleen. It's programs like this that make me particularly proud to be a member of public radio.
Thanks, Scott.
Just for starters. My question, though, is regarding if we have, in fact, officially been relegated from democracy status to a plutocracy or oligarchy, certainly I would assume that one of those oligarchs would have to be considered Sheldon Adelson. And I was hearing a story recently that he, with the new ability to do unlimited, virtually unlimited donations to Congress, he is on a one-person crusade to outlaw internet gambling, and says because of he's worried about the negative moral impact that might have, never mind the fact that, as I understand it, he made many, many, many billions, millions or billions of dollars running casinos in Las Vegas. So my question is, if he is really thinking he can, I'm assuming he's a smart man, if he's assuming that he can outlaw internet gambling, how's he going to do that? Last I heard, the World Wide Web meant it was all around the world. Does he have influence like this in other places, or is this, or do you know?
Yes, no, actually I do. I know Sheldon. I've known him for about 20 years because I wrote a book about the gambling industry in the early 1990s. Let me tell you how rich Sheldon Adelson is. He owns two personal 747 jets, one of which, in my last book, The Fine Print, I reveal is equipped for his youngest heirs to do skateboarding in the sky.
Oh, no.
You know, the pilot can make the thing swoop and dip so they can skateboard. And Sheldon's money really comes from his casinos in Macau and Singapore. His, and I've been to both of them, his Macau casino wins more money from players than all the casinos on the Strip in Las Vegas. It has 22,000 employees in a single casino.
Oh, my
goodness.
An
extraordinary thing to go see. And the one in Singapore, he has a fleet of seven jets just to run wealthy gamblers from Macau to Singapore, because the Chinese Communist government doesn't get records from the Singapore gambling, but they could, one everyone believes, from the Macau facility, which, by the way, is crawling with spies. Anyway, the Sheldon is, who's worth somewhere north of $20 billion, is working very hard to prevent online gambling, because there's no profit in it for someone like him. He needs you to come to the hotel and lose big sums of money. We had an absolute prohibition on online gambling in this country. And I wrote a column when I was with Reuters about how the Justice Department quietly issued a decision saying that, well, the ban on what was called wire transfers used for gambling only applied to some very limited circumstances. And this has opened up online gambling. It's now coming to New Jersey. It will totally destroy what's left of Atlantic City. I mean, why go drive all the way to Atlantic City from New York or Philadelphia when you can gamble at home? And I happen to agree with Sheldon. I think having online gambling is a terrible idea. And having credit gambling is a terrible idea. I don't know if Sheldon can stop it or not. The problem is that our politicians are so out of touch because of the campaign finance system with the actual concerns and needs of the country. And so many problems, you know, multi-billion dollar scandals and problems that I and others have pointed out don't get fixed. And literally, there's not even hearings on them. I don't know if he will succeed in that or not. But, I mean, frankly, I hope he does. I think online gambling will turn out to be a terrible scourge in our society.
Scott, thank you so much for the call. Let's do one more. We're in a pledge drive, too. So where else are you going to learn this kind of information? David, you got stories unbelievable. I mean, they are believable. But
well, there's no commercial radio station anywhere that would have me on for an hour, even if I were singing the praises of the rich. I mean, it's just they don't do it. If you want to have serious, thoughtful, communication, you've got to have an alternative, and that's public radio in this country.
Thank you, David. And the pledge number is 888-202-2552. Andy in Fond du Lac writes on email, I'm reading Piano Player by Kurt Vonnegut Jr. right now, and I'm wondering about the role of automation in income inequality. If a few people own the computer servers and robots that do most of the work, shouldn't we tax the owners and maybe even implement a minimum tax or minimum income for those whose work is displaced?
Yeah, this is the biggest crisis in the long run that we face. And I just bought Player Piano for my number three grandson, who's 14, to read, to understand this. The founders wanted us to be a country where everybody was a capitalist. They wanted yeoman farmers who owned their own land rather than sharecroppers, and they wanted every worker to own their own tools, which, of course, doesn't work in today's world. Every worker can own his tools because we have mass manufacturers. But we should be working on a society where everybody has a capital stake. And James Madison, before he died, proposed that this is what we should focus on, that part of the money workers get should be in shares of businesses. Louis Kelso, the financier in the 50s and 60s, proposed that everybody be a capitalist. And when it got through the sausage machine of Congress, it became ESOPs, which are, they're okay, they aren't quite his idea, but the companies that are employee stock ownership plans are generally more profitable and more durable than most companies. The business I started with my son managing a hotel, one of my other sons managing a hotel, I said to him one day, you know, the one thing we don't need to worry about is the core of our business going away, which is we make money by hiring the chambermaids who fix up the rooms and then charging a little extra for the work that they do. My son says, come here, takes me to the internet and shows me a video of a bed that makes itself.
Oh, my.
It isn't, it's very, very, you know, and I said, oh, come on, it just smoothed the sheets out. And he went, yeah, and Henry Ford's Model T became the Tesla. Machines are going to do more and more and more work. And if all the ownership is narrowly held, if the vast majority of Americans have no stock, then what are we going to do? So we need to have a wider distribution of capital and people acquiring capital with the earnings of their capital. We need to have less debt. And the way to get there begins by having unions and higher wages and getting rid of these non-free trade agreements, but these export jobs agreements we have that have literally killed 2.8 million manufacturing jobs just with our China deal.
David, thank you so much for being with us. David K. Johnston, David's latest book is an anthology, Divided, The Perils of Our Growing Inequality. As he said, you won't hear this kind of conversation anywhere on commercial radio. That it's one of the reasons we have varieties of viewpoints. You got to hear them all. Pledge, please, during our spring drive, 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian on Wisconsin Public Radio's Spring Membership Drive. You do count on us for these kinds of discussions. It's your gift of any amount that makes them possible. Give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Thank you so much if you've already given. And we have about 5 minutes left, and we're looking for 21 pledges. So let's make this hour's goal. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Conversation about income inequality. We started having these with David K. Johnston 10 years ago, if not more than that. We've talked to him many, many times. It's an example this hour of the important and informative, this guy's informative, conversations that we have on this program every day.
Take a few minutes to make this great show and many more possible. Decide the amount you want to give, then make your pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Is listening to WPR worth $4 a day to you? You may consider becoming a member of the 9XM Leadership Circle. 9XM members are listeners who contribute $1,200 or more a year to support our programs. $1,200 works out to less than $4 a day.
If you find you've been getting more value from Wisconsin Public Radio in the past year, join the 9XM Leadership Circle. Do it right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Make your donation in support of the programs you count on. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Whether your pledge is $5 a month or $100 a month, we appreciate and we count on your gift.
supporting Wisconsin Public Radio is really a superb thing to do with a few minutes of your time this afternoon. And it's so simple. This is what we need. Your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay.
Your gift supports the stories and the programs that keep you connected to the world. Give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
So why should you give at this very moment? I got two reasons for you. One, because you're listening right now, and two, because you're thinking about it right now.
And it's the right thing to do. And you'll feel good when you do it. WPR is an important public service, and you'll be making an investment in quality news and talk.
We use all the donations very wisely. We put it right back into the programs that you hear every day. So support the station you value right now. Do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
20 pledges in the next few minutes, so your pledge is important now. Make it now. Donate at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
WPR, it's probably a preset in your home radio or your car radio, or, you know, it's probably a preset in both your home and car, so the bottom line is you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio a lot. Become a contributing member right now.
Yes, ma'am.
888-202-2552, WPR.org.
Thank you, Lisa. And thanks for all of your pledges. Thanks to KP Whaley for on-air production, and thanks to KP as well for the production of David K. Johnson. He's always worth listening to, isn't he? He's got a lot of information. Thanks for your pledges. Again, it's 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. We have news coming up. Please stay with us for the second hour of our program on this Tuesday.